Guild Massachusetts chapter invite you to a Know Your Rights training and FBI update for peace and justice groups next Wednesday, November 3rd from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Community Church, 565 Boylston Street in Copley Square. With attorneys David Milton and Myung Jun, National Labor Guild Mass Executive Director Ursula Masni-Latos, and ACLU of Mass Education Director Nancy Murray. What should Greater Boston Peace and Justice groups know about the recent FBI raids in Minnesota and Illinois, and the questioning of activists in various other parts of the country? What rights do you have if you get visited by the FBI or other law enforcement agents? And what are the implications of these changes since 9/11 for protest activity? If you would like to attend as a representative of a peace and justice group, please RSVP with your name and the name of your organization to nlgmass-director@igc.org. That's NLG as in National Labor Guild, mass-director@igc.org, or visit the ACLU of Massachusetts website for more information.
And next Saturday, November 6th, the Home Energy Efficiency Team will hold its next barn raising. That'll be from 12:30 to 5 p.m. at 27 Avon Hill Street in Cambridge. The home is an old parsonage with good draft reduction opportunities in the attic and basement. Learn how to weatherize old windows, bureaus built into the wall, and an attic hatch. Learn how to reduce your water and electrical bill. Find out why homes with interesting roof lines, like gables or dormers, tend to have high heating bills. The Home Energy Efficiency Team, or HEAT, H-E-E-T, is a Cambridge-based co-op bringing neighbors together to weatherize homes and take the energy future into your own hands, or into our own hands. Visit heatma.com, that's H-E-E-T-M-A.com, for more information.
And the Great American Book Drive returns to Boston on November 6th, which is next Saturday. Better World Books, Boston's Prison Book Program, and the City Mission Society will host this annual book drive. You're invited to donate new and used books to help raise money for the Prison Book Program. Previous drives have collected tens of thousands of books, and this year's organizers are looking to break some records, but not books. It's next Saturday, November 6th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., rain or shine. And just drop the books off at the Nonprofit Center, which is located at 89 South Street in Boston. For more information, visit prisonbookprogram.org. They are a wonderful organization, a grassroots organization founded in 1972 with the purpose of sending free books to prisoners. And that is all we have time for. It is 7 p.m., and I believe there are human beings. I believe, I have faith, and I trust. The views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, nor the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Next week, as you may know, is WMBR's annual fundraising week, the one week in the year where we talk to you about capitalism and your role in it. No, that can't be right. The one week where we ask for your support. It starts next Thursday and goes till the following Wednesday. We will have some fun next week, and we hope you will be with us having fun, too. Meanwhile, stay safe this weekend. Watch out for the ghouls. And coming up next, the one true religion. Stay tuned. You're listening to WMBR in Cambridge.
مرحبا في Music for Human. I'm a Dr. Jalis Sakran, and I welcome you. On this special live edition of Music for Human, I'm so pleased to feel radiating waves of listening. And I'm joined here by Zoro, the numerologist. Zoro, welcome.
Welcome to you as well, and welcome to all the listeners out there.
Zoro, it is so wonderful also to welcome you and to be welcomed by you. Zoro, I sense there is a difference in your voice this evening.
I think you may be sensing the resonances of a plague which has struck me over the last over the last week. It has been but a cold, but a reminder of my own humanity, my own fallibility.
So you draw a lesson from this physical ailment?
There is a time for everything in life. I believe there is a verse to this effect. You know, a time to be born and a time to die and these things. And yes, it had been some months since I had caught a cold before, but yes, these things must happen occasionally.
There is a fascinating, almost duality there, because there is a spirit there which is strong, even as the body itself is frail.
Well, thank you, Doctor.
I think that in nature we see a similar duality with the frog.
How do you mean precisely?
Well, the frog, it begins its life as a fish and ends its life more similar to a lizard.
Yes,
and on the land. I think that a similar duality also is enjoyed by the bicycle.
How so?
Just as the frog must grapple with an identity crisis as neither a fish nor a lizard, so must the bicycle struggle as neither a pedestrian nor an automobile.
Yes, and we know this well in Boston.
Indeed. As I was journeying here to the studio, I was struck by the vast number of bicycles that were arranged together, blocking the entire street. It was a narrow bridge.
Do you believe this was deliberate?
I do. They were chanting a slogan. It was, "Whose roads? Our roads."
Ah.
They were claiming possession of the roads.
Well, I think that humans, especially our Western culture, it likes ownership, and we like to own things. Yes, so it is not so surprising.
And yet, to me, that is a declaration that we bicycles are cars.
Ah, yes, I see, because the road in your mind is still for the automobile. But we must remember that the road was invented long before the internal combustion engine.
It's true, and yet I myself am a pedestrian, and I would not walk on the road. I walk on the sidewalk. In fact, even as I was crossing the bridge, I noticed several of the bicycles were also on the sidewalk.
Ah, they presume to be everywhere.
I think that it really is this identity crisis.
And neither the fish nor the lizard, yes.
Precisely. Simply walking on every area and seemingly obeying the rules of none of these areas also.
You know, I think that each of us really, we walk this in our own lives. Consider one man who is raised, his culture, he will remember and have this nostalgia for the things of his childhood. But he must face the future, and he is never really sure if he belongs to the time he was born or if he is to belong to the future.
Indeed, indeed. It is a question of identity. We like also on Music for Humans to tempt you with this issue of identity. Are you a listener or do you join us by calling 617-253-8810? Caller, welcome.
Hello.
Welcome, caller. Caller.
Hello.
Caller.
Yes.
Marhaban, welcome.
Good evening. How are we tonight?
We are well.
And I was...
And we asked about
I often caller. Wonder when you're talking about walking and everything, about how much of this great planet of ours, in terms of land, of course, not sea, but is there... a great amount of area that a man has not walked on. In other words, you know, virgin to any human's foot.
Yes, yes. On. Which portion of our continents remain untouched?
Probably more in mountainous areas, I would imagine, but...
Or perhaps the very deep desert, I believe.
Yeah.
It's true.
That's possible, sure.
Those lands that have a vastness that makes it seem unreal.
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, the question came up, you know, because people talk about, you know, things like Bigfoot and stuff, you know, things that are myths or whatever, and you say, well, you know, somebody must have seen one by now.
But if we have not been everywhere, how do we know?
Yeah.
Well, even
and that's how, I guess, how these myths stay alive. But
even more disturbing is that even if we were to cross every point, we would have to cross it at the right moment.
I'm sorry?
That we would have to cross the point at the proper moment in order to witness.
To cross the path, sure. I've done a great deal of walking in my life. I've only recently started driving again, and I do miss it, you know.
Yeah, I myself, in my age, it has become difficult to walk great distances, but I very much avoid driving when possible.
It's definitely something we take for granted, I think. To be able to just get in this machine and drive from point A to B, it's something we take for granted. And losing my license for a while taught me that, you know, the ease in which you can just get somewhere. It is convenient, but we lose track, I think, too, of I mean, often in the summer, I would take my shoes off, and if I could walk on grass or something, you know, pleasant through your feet, and I enjoyed that part of it.
Absolutely. I remember that when I began to drive, when the cars became more common, that I remember this incident where a cyclist drove by and wrapped his knuckles on my windshield, and I was previously accustomed to greeting the people that I met on the road. I realized I was becoming dehumanized.
I'm very, very sorry.
And so, caller, I wonder if... So you drive habitually now. Caller?
Well, I can't hear too well on the phone. I'm going to switch to the radio, but I'm enjoying your show. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Thank you, caller, for joining with us. If anyone else would like to call and join with us even briefly, it's 617-253-8810. I found that for a brief period of time, the best way to connect was to frequently stop the car, to open the windows, and to simply speak to the other people I was interacting with, even if not directly.
Yes. It helps even when their windows remain closed, that you open yourself. And it is a good exercise, I think, to keep yourself open, even if the receivers of your message, they are not open themselves. You may still practice to perfect your own being.
Indeed, in a world full of machines, we do not have to lose. We are not obligated to abandon our humanity.
I would even argue, Doctor, that we are obligated not to abandon our humanity.
I recall an incident at one point where I was accustomed to periodically carry with me a soup or otherwise small meal, so that if I met a hungry person in the road, that I could offer him or her, or indeed them, some respite from their fasting, particular lesson.
That's very, very kind of you.
It was a lesson for me also. But when I began to drive, I found that for a time I would still carry with me the food, and seeing no one to give it to, I would later consume it myself. But there was again this incident where the cyclist wrapped his knuckles on my windshield as he rode by, as though to say, "Jalis Sakran, I see you, and you are in my way." I realized that I had not lost entirely my humanity from the car. So I rolled down the window and I threw the soup at him. I said to him with the soup, "I will feed you, even if you have no mouth with which to be fed."
That is very poetic. I think this is a good sentiment to have.
I think to me it was a lesson. There was patience. I needed patience. That I felt within my automobile as though he had violated my space, as one who had wrapped his knuckles directly on the window of my house. Or as one who had wrapped knuckles directly on my glasses, directly.
But, you know, it is very difficult to overcome the barriers which we put between ourselves with these windows. And so I think we must admire the courage which it takes to to break through and communicate with another person in spite of these technological barriers. Yes.
And yet I wonder what was the cyclist communicating to me? I suppose without context it is impossible to divine this. But even now, I do not remember the context. I simply remember the soup raining down. And tonight, as I'm walking, I'm thinking of the cyclist. I see the many, many cyclists, bejeweled and riding, chanting. The motorists, of course, simply gesticulating with frustration because their lives are paused while they are driving. This is not life. Life is when they arrive or before they have left.
They are in a form of the suspended animation, perhaps, and they wish to be out of it.
But I actually think that life does not pause because you are in the car. It does not wait for you. It continues. And so, if we appreciate that just as meeting a person in work or at home, that these people that you are driving next to, or the people that are rushing by you, they are still people that you are meeting. It is strange to think then that I am a person who... I'm not a person who throws soup at the people I meet, and yet I threw soup at a person I met.
Indeed.
Why is our perception so different from inside the car?
Well, I believe again that the barriers which we set up are difficult to overcome and to adjust to the new structure of our reality. With respect to these technologies is quite difficult. I think this underlies your anxiety.
If any of our listeners drive,
you know, I'm not sure. I do believe in my memory that some of the callers have been on the road in some form, but it is uncertain.
Is it right, Zorro, that our lives are not suspended during the drive?
Well, I am not sure if this matter is objective or subjective. But I think that your point of view, as you have given it to me, is quite reasonable. I would say that for me, I agree.
Let's ask one of our callers what they think. The number, if you'd like to call, 617-253-8810. Caller, welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to you, caller.
The notion of how we should get from point A to point B without isolating ourselves from the rest of humanity, perhaps one could hire litter bearers and have a transparent curtain or a thick curtain so that one could be seen or would not be seen as one wished, as one's litter bearers carried one along Mass Ave. And then one could relate to the passersby and give them alms or give them nourishment as the poor and needy beg for alms along Mass Ave.
And this would be a way of connecting with the stationary, but how would one connect with the moving? Because, caller, I believe and I love this image of the majestic person who is being borne by others. But is this not intended as the first barrier?
I understand not of what you speak. A barrier to what?
Well, what I'm trying to say is that there must have been a time where every person in the road was a person that you have met and that almost certainly you would rely on to rescue you in the case of injury, to help you successfully complete the journey. And at some point, a person of power decided that he would no longer interact, that he would be removed and installed a barrier. He bore himself upon a mobile throne and was no longer approachable.
Perhaps the solution to this dilemma is to simply have far fewer people in our society, so that we would therefore know each and every one of us. Perhaps if our population were to plummet, that the problem of which you speak would abate.
You know, I think I see an alternate solution. Perhaps if in these times with these technologies, we can spread the human race across the galaxy and make for ourselves a home in which we do know everybody but need not hinder the development of the human race.
But are we not then destined to simply encounter the same difficulties?
Ah, yes.
Let's bring a second voice in to join with us. Caller 2, marhaban.
Yes.
Welcome.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Yes. I have been following Ray Kurzweil and Singularity University. And one thing Dr. Kurzweil has done has been able to is not only get out of his house, he's gotten out of his car, and he's gotten his brain out of his body. And he does have a system where his brain rides a bicycle. And I've seen him riding around campus, and he seems to be doing very well with that.
And what is the purpose of extracting the brain in this way, caller?
It removes the barriers between Dr. Kurzweil and the universe and us and his bicycle.
Caller, I wonder if this may not be a confused attempt, because it is not indeed the presence of the skull, of the eyes, of the mouth. These are not barriers, but they are in fact ways of communicating. They are removing barriers. They are channels. And so I wonder if the removal of the skull, replacing the bone with a jar, does that not cause a greater distance between him and others?
Well, I feel a greater psychic presence. It's harder to describe with my mouth, and but I just felt the presence of him being one. And I just thought it was a wonderful thing. A new approach, perhaps.
And can you tell me about your changed interaction with him?
Well, I'm having a hard time getting past my intellect on this particular issue.
Well, why don't we bring another voice in this, or not? If someone would like to call in, perhaps, who has also interacted with Dr. Kurzweil, the number is 617-253-8810, and I think it seems that we have one line open. Callers, are you still with us?
I'm here.
And caller one? Caller one seems to have gone. So again, if you'd like to call in, 617-253-8810, let's bring you on the air. Caller three, marhaban. Caller?
Hello?
Welcome, caller.
Hi.
Hi to you, caller.
I'm good.
And caller, are you driving or are you walking?
I'm sitting.
Caller, can you tell us about your interactions with others? Caller?
Yes. I'm in the process of creating my own reality, and I'm not sure that sitting or walking or driving is particularly relevant.
Well, no, and again, caller, so it may not be, but my own feeling is that the moment that I first stepped into the automobile, I became disconnected. Perhaps I needed a convertible, another way, but there is a very physical barrier that is placed, and that did have a profound effect on me. I think caller three is trying again. Let's see if we can bring her on.
Well,
here.
If you remove your brain from your physical body, that the problem of the physical really gets eliminated. Sounds like that caller is working on it. That's one manifestation.
Indeed,
of going extracorporeal.
One of the steps in the process is this very high pitched voice. Caller three.
Yes.
Is caller three with us?
I forget what my number is.
I think you are caller two. Let's try a caller four now. Let's bring another caller in. Caller four.
This is caller four.
Marhaban, caller four.
Welcome, caller four.
Yeah, I've been having a recurring nightmare lately in which I am being mercilessly and abusively driven by an automobile.
So there is a reversal of roles.
And yet a symmetry.
And so, caller, are you a driver yourself?
No, sir.
So you are how is it that you move about?
Well, sir, I have a little green wheelchair.
This is, in a way, between the other options we have considered.
And caller, please forgive our ignorance, but what are the sort of legally, do you drive on the sidewalk or in the street?
No, I travel the wires above the highway, much the way the squirrels use the interwebs.
I see. You drive on the wires.
In your dream, did the car enter your body, open it, and sit inside your body, and drive you?
I'm sorry, I can't talk about this anymore. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Thank you, caller. Thank you. It's very difficult. Let's bring a caller 5 on the air then. This is a familiar friend, this caller 5. If anyone would like to call in, the number is 617-253-8810. I'm perplexed by this vision of being driven.
Being driven by an automobile, yes, it's quite alarming.
Generally, a reversal of roles indicates a great amount of reflection, which is proper and an excellent way of progressing. Caller 6, marhaba. Caller 6, please, and to all of our listeners, if you'd like to call in, please turn down the radio. Welcome back. I think this is caller 3. Caller 3?
Am I caller 2 in relationship to another caller named caller 1, or am I caller 2 in relationship to the duality that I would possess within myself?
Well, caller 2, the naming scheme is indeed chronological, but I think it is no accident that duality was discussed. And caller 3, of course, numerologically, and Zoro may correct me, represents the sacred.
Yes, it is aligned with the Trinity and these traditions, and perhaps this underlies the current incomprehensibility of the caller to us, or at least to me, Doctor.
But to me there is a suggestion that perhaps we are regarding these issues as over-serious. Caller 3, perhaps you could share some words with us.
Perhaps a dichotomy?
It is possible. According to this numerological tradition, the number 4, the fourth caller, would represent the material world, and our next caller, the 7th, would represent the combinations of both, and hence the divine. So if caller 7 would call us, the number is 617-253-8810.
I believe also 7 is associated with a sort of immortality. Perhaps caller 7 will endure.
Let's find out. Alas,
which caller was that?
That would have been, I think, caller 7.
Well, if you added 2 to 7 and divide by 3, you would get 3.
This is true.
Is 3 still on?
3 we have lost. I think, unfortunately, too perplexing.
Well, I'm the square root of caller number 4.
This is true, also.
And also, 2 plus 2 would equal 4.
Also.
But, you know, I'm not sure if it is always good to be wrapped up in the identity of a number. Sometimes the letters which are signified, perhaps if we had a color A, a B, a C, and so on.
Perhaps the caller would like to share his name.
Which number?
You, caller.
To break my anonymity?
Or to assign your instance of yourself a name for the sake of convenience. Perhaps we could call you Joseph.
I was kind of liking being number 2, but number 2's maybe that sounds too generic to have a personality.
I do not think so. I think number two, color two, is good for you.
Indeed, it is. It is.
I'd like to be called, I think, for the purpose of this conversation, Mr. Two. I was just getting very comfortable with my new name,
Mr. Two,
and the idea of you know, being separate from this name, which was cruelly given to me. My other name on my birth certificate.
Yes, we have no choice over this.
No, it is a burden that is placed on you.
Well, in this moment, I am Mr. Two.
And as Mr. Two, you suffer again from duality. There is this dual identity as your birth name and also as Two, symbolizing your two-ness.
Well, one of the reasons why I tune into the show is because I want to learn how to enjoy duality.
Yes, yes. I think this is a very good reason to explore duality. And this new choice of name for yourself is probably a good way to catch up with that.
Well, so tell me about your struggle. What other aspects of duality have challenged you? Because are you also a cyclist?
Well, yes, I am. And it's that I have two sides to my body, and there's two pedals on a bike, and there's two handles on the handlebar. And I'm always doing two things with one side of my body and the other side of my body, and it seems to happen in spite of me.
And yet there is this balance. If all the things were on the right side, the bike might collapse, yes. So I think it highlights the necessity of this duality to the functioning.
That's right. But if, for example, if I get off the bike and I get into a car, I become more of one thing.
It unifies you, being in the car?
Yes. It puts me in one place, behind one steering wheel.
Indeed.
One gas pedal, one brake.
Now, do you find this comforting?
Yes.
But also, when you are walking, is there still the duality, the pull, the tension?
It goes on in spite of me. Right foot, left foot, right foot, left foot. I just don't know how it happens. But it's in spite of me, and I don't realize that I'm one person. I think I'm one person. But there I go, right foot, left foot, right foot, left foot. I mean, it just makes no sense, and I just do it all day long.
Yes, and it's a bit, in a way, though frightening, also awe-inspiring that we may carry out these actions, without even being conscious of them.
Yes, and quite frankly, I have no need to go anywhere. I just like to get off my bicycle and get in the car because of the way it unifies me.
So there is a centering that occurs when you drive. And have you? I know this is a bit modern, but I've seen the youth playing simulations of driving, virtual driving simulations. And I wonder if that is a useful meditation technique for you.
It's useful. And you know, the real thing that brings me into reality, that really makes me come into a sense of identity is parking tickets.
And this is ironic because I think that conventionally, this is met with frustration.
Yeah, but it's, you know, they're really the best thing. You know, there's a sense of somebody wants to connect with my license plate, my car, my checking account, and they want to contest my ownership of that space with my vehicle, and it creates a real psychodrama of who I am and who they are and who the parking space is.
Yes, it is very much a drama, I think. And sometimes in this modern life we search out an extra drama. But personally, my opinion is that we need to first rid ourselves of our material drama, and then if we wish a farce, we should do it as a performance. I believe as a play or a movie of some sort. I think this is really the way cope with the drama.
It's just a storm of feelings. Well, if anyone would like to join in on our storm, the number is 617-253-8810. Caller?
Yes.
I think we have another caller also with us. Is there caller 7 with us, caller?
Hello?
Yes, welcome, caller.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I'm digging the conversation.
So, caller, I wonder also, do you experience this duality?
Yes, with the seeing what I'm doing and then also being the acting person of the doing.
So there are two aspects there. There is the intender and the actor.
The driver and the car, I believe.
Mm. Yeah.
Interesting. And caller, also, do you find that you are centered? Because now our other caller, caller 2, who is still with us, caller 2?
Yes.
Caller 2 spoke of feeling divided when he is not driving. But you speak of a division that occurs during the drive, the difference between the part of you which intends movement and the part of you which moves.
Yes, exactly. That, the intender and the mover.
And is there a time where you do not feel divided, where you are a unified person?
I feel the slower I move, the less apparent that division is.
Now, caller two, is there any vehicle that you can command which is faster than a car?
Well, I was looking at Dr. Kurzweil's brain, and I was not sure. I don't drive for the purpose of going anywhere at this point, and I have been driving at this point just for the purpose of avoiding accidents. But I was thinking that it might be a more enriching experience to go out and cause and have and experience accidents.
I see, as a mechanism of experiencing unity or again embracing that storm of emotion that will occur, that is often associated with this experience.
That's it. And the documentation that comes from an accident is kind of like a super parking ticket.
So to you, there is a great deal of humanization, of grounding in bureaucracy.
Oh, it seems to be. I mean, it's an amazingly humanizing experience when the vehicles actually, make contact and split open, and then the disorientation and the whirling and that sort of thing happens and so forth.
Caller, I think in your case it might be interesting if I may give you some assignment, a homework, that you might consider experiencing and embracing a non-humanity briefly, simply exploring that other side of the spectrum.
Of having an accident?
Of casting off humanity and experimenting with simply being a spiritual, logical and merely a force.
A mechanical, perhaps.
being unified with the vehicle.
Indeed, indeed, or being unified outside of the vehicle, of experimenting with not
with becoming a vehicle of your own body.
Precisely, of unifying intention and action.
You know, I have a question. If the other caller has experienced this catharsis with an accident, to see this great release of energy and to feel the sort of emotional resonances which come with such an event.
Is the caller still with us? I think we lost callers.
It might be useful if a car called in.
That would be quite illuminating, I believe.
It is true. Well, if a car, or indeed a human being, or a mechanical being, wish to join us, the number is 617-253-8810.
It would be perhaps good to have that new Google car that drives itself.
Hmm.
If it
were to call in and to voice its own opinions. Let's bring that eighth voice in now. Caller 8, marhaban. Caller 8, welcome.
Hello?
Welcome, caller. Caller.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
Hi, marhaban, I am caller.
Welcome, caller, welcome.
Hi. I'm very serendipitous. I'm actually calling you while I'm driving right now.
Excellent, caller. And can you tell us...
I've always viewed the automobile as a sort of time machine, because what happens during your ride has a ripple effect that affects your entire life.
Both forward and backward.
Yes. If you get there on time, your day could be completely different. If you get there late because of traffic, could have a negative effect on your life, and it's really like a time machine if you look at it.
But the way you say it also, caller, is a dependence on circumstances that are outside of the automobile, that, as you say, because of traffic, because of an external force, because, as it may be, the universe...
Yes, but it's amplified.
Indeed, because...
The automobile amplifies this effect.
Because with walking, there is very rarely a situation which will change your...
Time is much more linear when we're walking.
Precisely, precisely.
And it's much more gathered up and bunched together when we're driving. Yes. Concentrated.
It is very interesting, I think, this view of the automobile as a sort of amplifier.
But does it also amplify, because I think that I have never seen people more outraged than those in the automobile. And I wonder if it is a product of this amplification or this failure to amplify.
Interesting.
I think road rage is probably one of the purest forms of theater. And
well, that's true. And if you notice, when we walk, we would never throw soup at someone.
Precisely, precisely, because...
It seems like the circumstances and the consequences are much more amplified when we're driving. If you bump into a signpost while you're walking, it's much less dangerous than if you hit a telephone pole while you're driving.
Indeed, or even more simply, if you happen to bump into someone, or you are in their way while you are driving, it's tragic.
Right, that's correct. I also view the automobile like the mind is the body is the vehicle of the mind. It's almost like the person is the mind of the automobile.
Indeed, indeed. I understand also that there is a dream, a desire of the robotic self-driving car.
Yes, it's like Transformers.
I'm not familiar, but this vision is a great one to me, because the humanity can return, that a person no longer anthropomorphizes the car at all. It is not you who are behind the car causing it to bump into someone else. It is the car that is doing the bumping or avoiding the bumping.
Yes.
And hence we become simply victims of a system that we have very little control over.
Well, victims of somebody else's bumping.
Indeed, but simply a system, an external force. No longer, I think that a lot of frustration is met because we have an illusion that we are able to perhaps arrive early in spite of traffic, or that we are blameworthy because we have control.
Yeah. Well, is it? Can I ask a question?
Yes, yes.
When I get in the car and then I get out of the car, am I the same person or am I a different person?
You're a different person because of your experiences.
Ah.
Yeah, I think we're in a very, very real, basic way, we are always changing.
Yes, with every experience we change.
I have a confession. I see these boots being put on the cars by the parking attendants, and there's a kind of an eroticism to that to me.
Well, unfortunately, callers both, we are out of time, but I'm very interested in hearing about the booted cars.
The best thing about Denver boots are the omelets.
Thank you both, callers, for
joining
us.
Okay, bye-bye. Auto-eroticism.
And thanks to the many callers who did try to join us or who joined us earlier. Thanks also to Zoro here, the numerologist.
Thank you, Doctor, and thank you to our listeners as well.
I am Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human every Friday at 7 p.m. on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. Stay tuned for Radio Ninja. Ma'a salama.
For safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
He came from outer space to save the human race. A creature with a dream to entertain the children of the night. The rest, as they say, became history.
Magogo. The Show. Saturdays, 8 p.m. WMBR, 88.1 FM, Cambridge.
Thank you. Hello out there, Cambridge, and beyond. I am not doing a Halloween-themed radio show. Although, I will say I have picked a couple spooky